Blog Talk Radio.
All pirates, yes, dear rabbi, all died to the merchant ship. Minutes after day to kite, from the bottom lifted, but my hand was made strong by the end of the Almighty. We forward in this generation, triumphant.
Greetings, my fellow Belizeans, my fellow listeners all over the world, especially those in the diaspora and in the motherland. I'm really excited to be live from Belize, and I'm really excited also about the guests that I have coming on. But before I get into that, I want to greet everyone in the name of peace. Peace, which is a universal greetings from all the prophets, from Adam to Muhammad. And now we're still looking for that universal peace that the world can't seem to give. Last week, I wasn't able to do the show because of logistics, but I had my good associate, Derek Estrada, a.k.a. Nuri Akbar and Bilal Morris, subbed in for me, and they did an excellent job to do a tribute to the late Bert Tucker. And I just want to say something before I introduce my guest, because this is one of the issues that really, really gets to me, because We have some really brilliant Belizean minds all over the diaspora and in Belize as well, but Belize in general, but the diaspora in particular. And we don't appreciate them the way that we need to. Look at this brother here, Bert Tucker. He was one of the preeminent economists in the Caribbean. He worked with Manley. He worked in Namibia in Africa with virology in Ghana. This guy was internationally renowned as far as his enlightened thinking was concerned, and his level of consciousness that was unprecedented. Yet and still, when he tried to work with Belize, and I remember when I met him about 20 years ago, 20 or 25 years ago in the 80s, I was a young guy then. You know, he was at that time, you know, pushing the idea of called TOTKIN, which is the transfer of know-how through expatriate nationals through the UNDP, United Nations Development Program, and the idea that we can transfer expatriate know-how back to the motherland to benefit the development of the economic and social development of our nation. And do you realize that the kind of static fighting and hostility that these ideas or the idea of people, you know, taking know-how back, transferring know-how back to Belize, it wasn't met with any kind of open arms. And so one has to wonder about Belize in terms of, do we really want to stay in a static state of development where we just go essentially chasing our tail and we don't challenge the validity of the status quo? We just accept everything and don't want to question why we are where we are and what we're doing and how we're doing it? Or do we really want to embrace the diaspora, embrace those minds, those brilliant minds, all the way going back to Samuel Haynes, who wrote the National Anthem, and many others, Bert Tucker, a brother who loved Belize relentlessly and only wanted to see the economic well-being of that country for the good of it, for all Belizeans, not for a selected few or for the government playing as a gatekeeper and deciding who gets what and who allocate resources based on nepotism, cronyism, and the minions who pay homage to their shrine. So I'm very certain that he has passed, but another brother who we're bringing on is Dr. Bernard Bowa. This brother here, he's in a league of his own in terms of his enlightened thinking as it relates to Belize and his worldview and the diaspora. He's one of the leading fellow at Harvard, in scientific research for heart, to find better ways to make the heart healthy. And one of the things I like about Bernard, let me just tell you something. Bernard is a friend of mine from when we were kids. From primary school, Queen Square Anglican, we both went to school there, and I've been knowing him since was infant one, preschool actually. So he's a very dear friend of mine that we go all the way back to that. That's where our roots go back. I remember as a kid, we used to go by his mother's house, and she would always feed us after school. So me and this brother go all the way back, and I'm very proud that he has, in fact, been one of the foremost Belizeans to tell us, look. He's the advocate of saying, your doctor can't make you healthy. He's more into preventative lifestyle, wellness. Promote a lifestyle that's in keeping being healthy as opposed to just waiting to get sick and then you go and you go to your doctor and hope that he can give you some drug, some synthetic drug that will make you well. This brother is talking about, hey, change your lifestyle or make your lifestyle more adequate where you can develop your lifestyle in the sense that you could promote healthy living so that, you know, like a kind of a prevention thing, and that way you don't have to wait until you in dire straits, then you go to your doctor and, you know, expect the doctor to make you comfortable. But I will let him expand more on many of the things that I'm talking about, because he's really and truly a brilliant mind. I've all met this brother ever since I've known him. He's always have a very enlightened and conscious mind about, as a humanist, how to make humanity better, how to improve the quality of life, not just for himself, but for all. And that's been his mantra from, I know this young brother here, he's always been, you know, selfless in giving his time, giving his expertise, giving his knowledge, you know, passing on to those who, you know, that popular education, if you will. So I believe that Dr. Bernard Bulwer is on the line. And Dr. Bulwer, are you there?
My brother Bertie, thanks. Bernard here.
Yes. Before we go on, I just want everyone to know that this is Hubert Pipersburg. I'm broadcasting live from Belize, and my guest is Dr. Bernard Bulwer, who is one of the leading research fellows at Harvard, and he also worked in Belize. he was a former head of Carl's Houston Memorial Hospital, so he has intimate knowledge of our healthcare system and what we need to make it more adequate and affordable for all Belizeans. So we'll be discussing this, among other things, as it relates to Belize, about the politics as well, and where healthcare tied into all that. So so how are you doing this morning, Bernard?
Well, both excited as well as, you know, facing this exchange with a bit of trepidation, especially from a responsibility point of view. And so I really appreciate the invitation, and I trust that, you know, it will be time really well spent, especially for, you know, fellow Belizeans, both at home and abroad. And so just bring it on, and let's, you know, share with our people whatever, you know, is in our minds and in our hearts, you know?
Okay. One of the things that I had said, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing currently in leading research for, you know, in it was endo, that's endo, your endo research for...
Echocardiography.
Echocardiography, yeah.
Essentially, I guess most people in Belize may know me for my very first book, Your Doctor Can't Make You Healthy, and maybe also in my post as the former medical chief of staff or director of medical services. But what I'm actually known out here in Boston, specifically at the main teaching hospital of Harvard Medical School, Brigham and Women's Hospital, is that, you know, their first books and teaching guides in echocardiography are the ones that I wrote along with my mentor, who is a professor at the medical school. And I'm also, what is the area of pioneering that I'm doing is that for the first time in medical history, we have these smartphone-sized devices, which is a game-changer as far as, you know, medicine is concerned. Essentially, it is like a smartphone that gives you moving pictures instantly, you know, anywhere you are, whether you're in an airplane, whether you're in space, whether you're on Earth, whether you're in anywhere the smartphone is, which is everywhere, even where there's doctor, even where there's no electricity, you know, essentially we can take that heart imaging technology that can show you moving pictures of the live beating heart, and you can literally text it, you know, email it, Wi-Fi it, whatever. And so it's a game changer on many fronts. So that is the focus of my work. I started an academy. It has not yet been launched. We're doing the groundwork before launching, called the Echo Stethoscope Academy, because the issue is that doctors have been carrying around a stethoscope for like 200 years. But mm-hmm. It's a very primitive tool. It is more of a it's more of a status symbol, a stethoscope type of thing. I'm not saying that to ridicule. Mm-hmm. It has had its time. It has had its best days. But essentially, a medical student with one of these smartphone-like devices is better than an experienced cardiologist who listens with a stethoscope. You know, so essentially it can look, I mean, it's a technology which was limited to big hospitals and teaching labs. but it now fits literally inside your pocket like a smartphone. And so that's the focus of my work. And what I'm doing is actually putting together all the tools necessary for any hospital, any medical school across the United States and around the world to be able to use this instrument. And the reason why you still see doctors carrying around a stethoscope is because essentially they've never been taught to use this instrument, neither have their teachers. So to get this moving, we have to literally put in place programs for both teachers and students. But it has started to catch on in this country and around the world, and it's really a new frontier, and that's the focus of my work and research.
Mm-hmm. I just want you to clarify something a little bit. So in terms of the research, you're looking at tell me a little bit more about this app, so I could go to the Apple Store on my iPhone and just download this app right now.
You can see glimpses of my work. Not everything is online, but if you just Google my name, Bernard Bulwer, echocardiography, you will see, for example, pocket guides on Amazon. There's an app. Actually, my real flagship work is going to be launched in about 3 weeks' time. This is really the foundation work. It will be on the App Store. It will be on Amazon. A whole range of services, both in terms of education, apps, and what have you, will be launched. But as I speak, there's a bunch of stuff on the internet that you can perhaps look. And if you want to get a glimpse of the academy, which I founded, it's called the Echo Stethoscope Academy. It is to be launched, but there's a preliminary site called the Echoscope, echoscope.org,
okay.
And that will be a glimpse of what it's about.
When is it going to be ready for like this? So I can download it on my smartphone, so I can just take it with me, just like any other apps that's on my smartphone right now. When would that be available?
The initial iTunes launch, but this is for a specific ebook. That will be in about 6 weeks' time, right? The book on Amazon and the App Store, that should be available, I would say, sometime in May. I can't give an exact date because doing some finishing touches on it. But that is more the sideshow of what I'm doing. Actually, it's the stuff that, to me right now, is like the least important of what I would like to share.
Yeah, of course. The reason why I brought it up, Bernard, because I know, you see, the thing about it, what I've found out is that, we tend to be, these gadgets and devices, these smart apps and smartphones that we have, people tend to just, wrap themselves around these devices. So, I'm sure they look there.
Absolutely, absolutely. Absolutely. No, I get where you're coming from. I really appreciate you asking me about this. It's both a company as well as some research that I'm doing in this whole area. But I didn't want to be too self-serving in terms of the agenda at hand. But essentially, I'm working on the cutting edge stuff. And just to let you know, I first came to the U.S. after my tenure in the Caribbean and after my training in England. But I first came to the U.S. in 2002 on invitation by a Nobel laureate. And I never had planned to become a citizen. It was never on my mind, the immigration issue. Mm-hmm. But I just said that to say that last year, because I knew that if I were to launch this company in this country, I had to be at least a permanent resident. And just on the basis of my work and the endorsement from the top people in this country, in my field, they took a week and just gave me a green card on the basis of my work.
But you weren't advocating to give up, you weren't advocating for any U.S. Permanency or any kind of citizenship.
No, I was. It's just that, for example, if I need to, and maybe I should just say this. This is more than just doctors having a cool tool to examine the heart, which is a big deal. It means that somebody drops, exactly if it's the heart, if the heart is beating, if there's a problem, fluid around the heart. You can tell a lot of stuff. It's a real game changer. But how I tie this in with this whole issue of citizenship and green card is that we have about 40 million people around the world with a condition called rheumatic heart disease. It comes from a sore throat. It starts in childhood. It is preventable. So if we can catch the children in Belize and around the world, some of these 40 million or more people, if we can teach their teachers, wherever they are, to get to us images of the heart, email, text them to us using these little smartphone-sized devices, essentially, we can literally put to an end rheumatic heart disease. There was a hospital here at Harvard Medical School that no longer exists. In 1973, the Good Samaritan Hospital closed its doors for lack of patients. The staff had completed its mission. I'm literally quoting from a publication where that hospital to treat rheumatic heart disease disappeared. The same thing can be done in Belize using this device. The same thing can be done around the world. We can catch these children early, make sure they get their monthly penicillin injections, and let all the deadly complications of rheumatic heart disease, which includes stroke, which includes irregular heart rhythms, we can put that as a thing of the past. So working on the device, working on the tools, is more than just doing something that's cool. It's actually doing something. And how it ties in with my whole desire to seek my green card is that if I'm to get grants, you know, research grants, I have to be either a citizen or a permanent resident. And so if I need to do this research in Belize, where we literally screen all these school children, and it just takes like literally less than 5 minutes. You know, you put this device on the children's chest. They don't have to take their clothes off. They can be right in the classroom, right? And we can get these images, right? And we can text them, email them to centers that can say, hey, you know what, this kid is cool, you know, or hey, this kid needs a deeper study or a more detailed study. That's the kind of significance that we're doing. And I believe there's a lot of grant money for global health. And so
research.
So much of what I'm doing here is actually putting together the tools that would make these things possible.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you're right, because, I mean, we utilize the technology to improve oneself. I think that's how it's trending now. But specifically, you know, speaking about the diaspora, and since you brought that up with tying into the Greek here thing, you know how there's this hostility that, and Bert Tucker and I used to talk about this all the time too, there's this hostility that exists, not only in Belize, but in the Caribbean, towards individuals such as us, who acquire a green card or who acquire U.S. citizenship after our 18th birthday. There's this hostility that suggests that the motherland, this attitude towards us that we're not, that our expertise, whether it's our economic or economic contributions, is not as appreciated as it should be. What do you think causes this kind of hostility towards something like this? Because you'd be surprised to know that people would be hostile towards an innovative tool like this that can help increase the health system in Belize.
You know, I think it's a combination of factors, but a huge part of it is the tragedy of our upbringing. I know of many countries around the world that literally embrace, welcome, engage their people in the diaspora because they know, you know, and if I use the word biblically speaking, you had people like the Josephs of this world who were exiled in foreign lands. They had new skills. They had new expertise. And they were there to help their people in time of need and literally help to rescue an entire country. This may sound like a mere historical issue, but we know clearly that whether it is China, whether it is India, whether it is many other countries around the world, they literally actively engage their young people to go into all the world and to learn, you know, the ways of people who have been there, done that, and to engage, you know, the motherland. And so what that does is that it rises all boats. But that's just at the people-to-people level. We really were taught a lot, because we were a small country that watched one another. We somewhere in our socialization, we never really celebrated each other's successes. And it's a two-way street. I believe that too many times people who have had either the fortune or the gumption to leave maybe come back home with different attitudes that maybe put people off. Additionally, the way Belize is. Let me get home. Belize is an enormously rich country, but most Belizeans think that Belize is poor. I can tell you literally, if you starve in Belize, you are insane. I can't say that of many other places. I mean, I am saying that you may not have the money to go out and buy food, but, you know, I have people I know from the United States, they go to this country and say, hey, you know, I'm going to save on a meal. I'm going to just pick a coconut, right? You know? Then it's a place where, I mean, I had the CEO of KHMH, he fishes off from the hangar. And I can tell you, I mean, because I've gotten fish from him, he may have me, I would guess that the CEO of KHMH may have 30 pounds of fish in his fridge that he caught off the land behind the hangar, right? And he's in Belize, you know. So I came into that because we think that we need to fight each other to survive. But Belize is a country where we don't have to fight each other to survive. And one of the sad things is that the history of politics in Belize, and I think I don't know if it's Dylan Vernon, who is one of our ambassadors in Europe, but I think shortly after the election, I think I recall reading an article, it's our turn to feed now, F-E-E-D.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so the socialization, the politics is part of it, is that we believe that we need to fight against each other to take it, or fight for the limited opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Fight limited that. And that is really not true. Not only so, that it actually reflects our own image of ourselves, because we need to tackle these things up front, and if we were to move forward as a country. The additional thing, too, is that, and this doesn't only refer to Belize. I recall in Cambodia, when the Pol Pot came to power, one of the first things that they did was to kill all the people who were scholars. They killed all the people who wore glasses. Because in their opinion, if people could read, right, and if people could think, they were seen as a threat to the system. So, also at the leadership level, sometimes there is a fear of people who may have been more exposed. Because when I was a boy, I really lamented when I first left for university. Why is it, you know, that our streets look the way they look? Why is it that the airport looks the way it looks? You know, back then, it was like a warehouse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And even to this day, you know, don't get me started, but even to this day, I think, and this comes close to my heart, I think that we, sadly, tragically, are bent on a sort of national cannibalism. And let me explain what I mean. They have a saying, if you don't hang together, you will get hung separately. And I see a situation where, as I touch on the roads, Bert, when last you went to Chedumal? Hello?
Greetings. I'm not sure if I'm having some technical difficulties. I think I lost Dr. Bowa, and I think I also dropped. Bear in mind, I'm in Belize, and sometimes the technology is not as efficient as it could be. So I'm trying to see if we can establish the link again.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. All right. Good. Great. I can hear you. So sorry about that, Bernard. I think sometimes I'm not sure how the broadband works here in Belize, but it does that sometimes. But you were saying, would you continue with the line of thought that you were going before we got separated?
Just give me the hint where you last heard me.
Well, we were talking about you were saying how we were talking about how people the attitude of Belizean towards those, and it's kind of like you say it's part of the social construct, and towards the Belizeans.
Did you hear me speak about what one of our current ambassadors had said after one of the elections?
Up to the point where we can, that it's not a poor country, and they brought a fish in.
Well, what I was saying is that, the Belize I grew up in, in our yard in Belize City, we had chickens, we had eggs, we had all kind of fruit trees in Belize City. And I was mentioning how, the CEO of KHMH, one of the things that he does is that he fishes somewhere behind the hangar, and he would have maybe about 30 pounds of fish in his fridge or freezer at any one time that he catches in Belize City. And I'm just mentioning that, we had people who visit Belize and are struck by the fact that, even though people may not have what you call cash, right? Nevertheless, it's not a place that you can starve, if you have your head screwed on your body, simply because we have a small population, a lot of land, and strictly speaking, if we know what we have, then we'll realize how well off we are. But even better yet, how better off we can be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I lament also the politics of Belize, where people are meant to feel that it's our turn to feed, and that's the term used by a current U.S. ambassador, a Belize ambassador in Europe, where he wrote an article, I recall glimpsing it, saying it is our turn to feed now, and so much of our people are. There is this strife, this competition, where people think that it is a zero-sum game. Is that mm-hmm. if I in charge, then it means that, it's my turn to feed. And at many, many levels in Belize, a lot of things have been built on patronage, meaning that in the educational realm, that if you were connected to a certain person, individual, or group, you had the opportunity. And so this mindset where we believe that it is us, you against your neighbor, is deeply ingrained in Belize. It's tragic, but it's deeply ingrained.
Mm-hmm.
I could look at it even, when I came back as a doctor, there were certain people there who were quote unquote from Belize royalty, right? And, I'm a little guy from Yarborough and so forth, You're not supposed to have, et cetera. And it is palpable how they treat you with disdain, or it's palpable how, rather than welcome you back home, they actually see you as a threat. And so even though when I came back from England with a specialty first in diabetes and preventive heart disease and nutrition, I was told by the people who ran the KHMH that they didn't need my services. And that's when I started to write. I had
imagine
to literally...
That.
Huh?
Imagine that.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that it's not only in that sector. People who come back as engineers, people... Because, you see, what we've been taught is we've been taught to fight for jobs. And remember, jobs in the civil service is based on posts, And there are never as many posts as there are people. And so what it means is that the way we have been trained is that we have to compete against one another. And whether it is politics, whether it is tribalism, By the way, I have two books I really want to write. One is The Gatekeepers, and the other one is Tribes at War. Because
mm-hmm.
it really reflects a condition of humanity And certainly when it comes to Belize, it becomes striking, because, you know, there is no reason why the diaspora should not be actively courted and engaged, but the diaspora also has a responsibility that when you engage with Belize, that you are not in competition for those limited spaces that people fight over.
Mm-hmm.
I think what the diaspora has to do is to bring the new thoughts and the new ideas and engage. But it's a two-way street. It cannot happen unless both sides want it to happen, you know. I know there was a talk about a diaspora grouping, but a diaspora grouping is not about people saying I'm a part of a diaspora group. The diaspora grouping is actually a conscious decision, that you either have your navel string or your history in a very special piece of this earth called Belize, and that you want to play your part to help take it to another level. Also, the politics of Belize is also historically a sad one, because politics is about winning elections, right? And all kind of individual elections who are not necessarily leaders. You understand? They may not win an election, but they may not be leaders, nor visionaries, nor statesmen. And so the agendas, sadly, politics in this country, the United States politics around the world, has to do with, you know, who looks after who funds who, you know, and everyone wants their pound of flesh once they're in power. If they're a supporter, they want a post, a position, some place on the board, and that's just how systems work, you know. So I think that there needs to be engagement on both sides. There are practical ways that this can happen. I believe that, you know, some people are interested in this, but I think the diaspora has to engage in Belize in very practical ideas. Give you an example. You know, a big thing right now in the urban area in the United States, in New York and other places, has to do with you know, urban farms. It has both a tourism sector and we have a local sector. I lament the fact that in Belize City, you know, that we've largely abandoned a lot of stuff that we used to do during my day. And that has to do with having stuff that really puts food on your table in your yard in Belize City. You know, I'm not just trying to go back to the old days, but I'm saying that, you know, simple things like we used to raise chickens in a coop, right? And we used to have eggs in Belize City. Now, this generation thinks that eggs and chickens are something that you get from the Mennonites.
Yeah.
And the Mennonites are the richest people in Belize. You know, there are some lots of very practical things. I am old school. When I was in the Caribbean, I laughed at my friends. You there, Bert?
Yes, I'm listening to you, brother.
I used to laugh at my Bahamian friends because back in Belize, we drank the pipe water and so forth. And then I went to Jamaica only to find that the Bahamians were buying waters in bottles, and I laughed at them. That was the most hilarious thing I heard. Until I went back home to Belize after a couple of years and found out that we
do the same thing,
buying water in bottles. And I am of the generation when it was almost like a standard that you would have some kind of vat in Belize City, because water is not something that comes from crystal or femagra. Water is something that, you know, comes from the sky. You have the means to collect it, and you have the means to distribute it. Now, why am I saying those things? I'm saying those things because, you know, there is a battle for human minds. And mental slavery is not just something about a historical issue, right? All this advertisement, all the value systems that are put out there, it is someone trying to tell you what to wear, what to eat, where to live, what is cool, what is not, you know. And until people have a very reflective view of what their life is, what their society is, then I think, you know, we become easy prey. I have a saying that, well, other people have this saying, if you don't set your agenda, someone else is going to set it for you, you know. And so, to a large extent, most people generally are sheep, right, and they are easily led. And so what has happened is that, you know, this is easy prey for those who want to shape how people think. I mean, when we used to be under the English master, and if you look at all around the Caribbean, you see Milo, you see Ovaltine, you see condensed milk, you see a lot of the things that the British valued. Now, I know better, right? The British have some of the worst health statistics in the world, okay? And so what we did is that we looked up to the colonial master, his food choices, his lifestyle. But I lived in Britain for over 3 years. You know, I studied in Britain. I worked in Britain, you know. And I realized that if there's one set of people we should not emulate in terms of their nutrition habits, should be the British. And I'm saying that purely on the basis of a medical nutritional practice. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But we have, as we say in Belize, we fall afoot what everybody else do. So we don't set the agenda. Other people tell us what is important, what is good, what is not. And so we are easy prey to whoever comes.
I think one of the things that back on...
Are you cracking up? I don't know why this.
Yeah,
maybe I should call on my other phone. I don't know if it's from my end.
No, it's not from your end. It's I'm on Skype and I'm in Belize, and so the connection is not as efficient.
Oh.
Okay, so
was that exchange okay? Did it come true?
Yes, you're perfect because you're calling my forum from the States, so you're good. I'm the one that's having the issues with the technical difficulties because I'm using Skype and it's not using the broadband in Belize. You know how that is. But what I was going to say was we replaced colonial functionaries. I mean, the colonials for local functionaries, which was that St. Holloway said that we are developing, because they emulate the same attitude that they saw, and this is one of the things that Bertuk always talk about. They emulated the same attitude that they saw the colonial master. and you got to bear in mind that colonialism was based on racism, sexism, classism, and racial and discrimination. So in order to understand Belize mindset, we must examine the where we came from as far as our. And I'm not saying this to say that, that's an excuse, or some people say, well, you're to blame. I'm not blaming colonialism. I'm merely saying that we need to examine that social construct of what that did to us as a people in our mindset, since we're discussing it. And also the fact that, Belize, like any other nation that went through a history of colonialism, reflected at the time of independence, were sharp class divisions, a dangerous gap between the haves and the have-nots. And and so we had a local elite or a petty bourgeois that really were the beneficiaries of the pertained by the colonialism. So that's the status quo that we battle. Who wants to have everything remain as they are and see the diaspora as a threat because of our exposure and our enlightenment on issues that our worldview based on that. So I think that's the monster that we're fighting. But specifically when you're in Belize, to the image. I'm sorry that you had to go through with that institution. And I'm not knocking institutions knocking beliefs, okay?
Right, this is a segue to something bigger as you're talking about colonialists versus neocolonialists. You know, they have a saying that if all you know is abuse, then that's all you practice. It's like someone who grew up in a home where they didn't know how to treat a mother, treat children, a history of abuse. It goes even more fundamentally to a very important human point, Bert. Why are we on the face of this earth? You understand?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How do you relate to your fellow man? One of the things that struck me here in the United States is that is how people have manipulated, even the scriptures. One of the basic things that the scriptures teach you is to be your brother's keeper. It teaches you to love your neighbor as you love yourself. It tells you about the parable of the sheep and the goats. Right? When was I hungry? Or when was I in prison? When was I sick? Well, the scripture says, whatever you do to the least of these, you've done unto me. Here's my point. People cannot rise higher than what they believe. And if you believe that you're on the face of this earth, as my mother said, of all my mother's children, I love myself the best, and when I get my belly full, the devil with the rest. If that's what you believe, then you live out the way we relate with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? And so if my life is about me, if my life is about get what I could get and to devil with the rest, then it affects the way I see people, the way I relate with people. So I hate to say that we have had a preponderance of a mindset which at its core is a very selfish one, because how can I celebrate? Let me put it to you like this. My mindset is one where I believe every human being was created in the image and likeness of his maker. By that I mean that when I look at a human being, and this I had to retrain the way I think, because I grew up, you know, looking at people differently. But as I got older and hopefully as I got wiser, what is the reason for my talent? Why am I at KHMH? Am I at KHMH for a job, or am I at KHMH so that the thing that we said we couldn't have, we could have? That when I left there after 2 years, that we had no cardiac program, and then we ended up having cardiac open heart surgery or a diagnostics, or that we had no dialysis. Why we had no dialysis? In less than a year and a half, we had not just a dialysis service and one dialysis nurse for the entire country, which was there previously, but we had 18 U.S.-trained dialysis nurses trained at home on the ground, right, you know, for both the Carlosian as well as in the center. When we had an emergency room, which from the time the hospital was built, you hearing me, Bert?
Yeah. I'm
when we had, at the time that the hospital was built, that if you're a sick person, when you go there, you don't see any nurse or doctor. You're locked up in a room. And what is in between you and the doctors and the nurses? There is a telephone operator smack dead in the emergency room. There's a toilet smack dead in the middle of that. And there's an eating room smack dead in the middle of that. And then they told me that that had to be that way. And you know what? Long story short, we eliminated all those rooms. And so when you go at the hospital, you can see every time a patient gets in there, they have to face the nurses, they face the doctors, and, you know, the hope is that they get at least the attention that they deserve. What am I saying is that when you start looking at what is your life and why are you there, is it about power, is it about control? If I have the ability to help, am I going to be pimping people? And I want to use plain language, you know, because some sick stuff happening where people just abuse their power, you know. You got to be pimped if you want anything. That is a disrespect for a human being. Is that what you'd want someone to do to you or your sister, your relative? Is that how you love your neighbor? So what I'm saying is that the way you look at privilege, opportunity, authority depends on why, how you see your life and what is your purpose, you know. And so this is what drives me. I mean, it saddens me that when you leave Chetumal, Bert, you hearing me? Hello?
Okay, this is the frustrating part about when you...
I'm back
when
here. Don't worry. It's part of the package.
Yeah, all right. I think what happens sometimes, Bernard, like I said, I'm calling you on Skype. I'm calling in on Skype, so I'm not... You're on a landline, effective line, and I'm calling on Skype, so...
Let's work with what we have, because,
Let's work
with
what we have, yeah. But okay, here's something I want to touch on, and as far as the healthcare in Belize, since you were bringing it up here, the healthcare policy, is it adequately meeting the needs and addressing the needs that are underserved in that country? Because based on what I saw, based on what I in my participatory observation, they have this sort of a leaving the poor to fend for themselves attitude, which I believe will further widen the gap between the disenfranchised masses and the well-to-do. So my question is, this discriminatory way of providing healthcare neglects the fact that even rich countries' markets don't function efficiently. Belize seems to want to say, well, if you can pay for it, then you get the care, but if you can't pay for it, then to hell with you. Why is this attitude so prevalent in a country that's only less than 250,000 or so people?
Let me answer this by, I don't know what part of that conversation got cut off when I started talking about the KHMH. Did you hear me speak about cardiac surgery?
Yes, you were a pioneer. You pioneered cardiac surgery.
You heard me speak about dialysis?
Yes, you pioneered that also, yes.
Mm-hmm. Then I started on the emergency room changes and so it got cut off. All right, let me explain a little thing to you. There is a tragic, and I would dare say, pathologic mindset, which is prevalent amongst a number of the more senior doctors in Belize. Again, I told you that, you know what it is about, my brother, in a nutshell with KHMH? KHMH was supposed to be a hospital that had such a bad reputation that only those who didn't have options would go. And one of the tragedies about KHMH is that there was, at one time, most of the doctors, the senior ones or the specialists who worked privately, also worked at the hospital. And you ask yourself, what is the difference? You know, why is it that if the doctor works at KHMH, you can't get care from him there? And why is it that you could only get help from him in the private sector?
Mm-hmm.
And so you start looking at motive. The KHMH, before I went there, was supposed to be a place that was a second rate, and then you had the two private hospitals were the place where you get specialist services. Let me dispel that notion in Belize. There's none of the private hospitals in Belize that is equipped to handle cases, emergencies like the KHMH. And I'll tell you, when I started cardiac surgery program and gotten the CAT lab and those things in place, just to let you know for the record, let the people of Belize know, there was active opposition from people who were the gatekeepers. And these were people whose motives to oppose was 100% the motive was profit. Okay? That they did not want anything that could be a money spinner to be done at the KHMH. The reason why the private sector had dialysis, and they had like two or three dialysis machines and one nurse and an assistant, and when we changed that, or was a part of that change, where we had 18 dialysis nurses, and we had about 20 dialysis machines shared between KHMH and La Loma Luz. This was because the opposition was because the people in the private sector were collecting millions of dollars from sick people who could least afford, but they were subsidized by the government of Belize. So the health care services in Belize, I'm not talking about vaccinations or maternal and child health where we have good records internationally for that, but at the local level, you know, the agenda, the mindset was that people who had money would pay in the private sector. And the KHMH was supposed to be downtrodden and disgusting so that anybody who had money would not want to come there. That thing changed under my tenure. And it changed because, you know, it was the right thing to do. There's no reason why the National Hospital shouldn't be the center of progress.
Mm-hmm.
There's a wider agenda even beyond medicine. I had started to speak about things that directly impact health, with, like, for example, the motor vehicle accidents. I don't necessarily listen to the Belize talk show for logistical reasons, but, you know, I would wish that the subject of discussion be how to progress. Because at the KHMH, did you notice in my tribute to Ambassador Bert Tucker that I sent you, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things I mentioned what we were working on?
Yeah,
the hospital would not have to evacuate during the time of a major hurricane.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Why did I write that? Can you tell me, it is up to the people of Belize right now as I speak to agitate that we want to have a KHMH that is built or rebuilt or we put in place some tower, because that was our plan, to get an all-weather tower that is high enough, tall enough, and strong enough to withstand any hurricane disaster. You want to tell me that it is reasonable that Belizeans would go to Belmopan or elsewhere in the time of a hurricane when that's where most of the people live?
Mm-hmm.
I will leave it to anybody to decide. You tell me what kind of policy is that. Can I tell you, if I'm authorized by the powers of be to get the money to put up an all-weather tower, you know I can do that, and I'm willing to do that even as I speak. But those things you have to do through governments and institutions. Hello?
Yes, yes, indeed. That seems to be...
So the agenda for Belize, what we need to agitate is some of the solutions. We need to run with the ideas and stuff that is put in place and say, you know what, we will pressure our politicians and let the politics and the agendas for the election be that we will create an all-weather tower for Belize fit for KHMH so that the hospital does not need to empty and patients transported in the rush or sent home sick during a time of an impending hurricane. Let's look at the roads. You want to tell me, when last you've been to Chatham, Albert?
I have not been to, I think
okay.
Within the last 2 years.
All right, your parents would tell you that Chatham was the backwater, Belize City was the big city. But look at the roads that as you leave the border and you come across to Belize. The roads in Belize are the killing fields. You want to tell me that we, including the politics, disregard our own lives, that we don't even realize that at least the heavy roads between Belize and Chetumal and Belize City and Belmopan at least should not have a dual carriageway that is marked and lighted? When are we going to advocate for those things? But I hate to say it, sometimes we get carried away and talking and reacting to a whole lot of issues which may be important, but they're not really that important. Because we have to move beyond a complaint culture to a solutions culture, you know? I mean, give you an example of something that I think epitomizes how Belizeans act. You remember the burying ground, Lord's Ridge?
Mm-hmm. Lord's Cemetery, yes.
Everybody knows that we'll die, right? Everybody knows from the city, knows that when you die, you will be buried at Lord's Ridge. Everybody between Belize City and Belmopan pass Lord's Ridge almost, you know, every time, you know, you travel to Belmopan. But everybody knows that the burial ground needs to be expanded, but everybody sees that the burial ground is getting smaller and smaller and people building on it and allowed to build on it, given permit to build on it, or allowed to squat on it for reasons which are obvious, either money changing hands or it suits the politics of the day. And you know what happens? The burial ground disappears. And you know what happens? Is that we will all who die have to go 8 miles, 10 miles, 15 miles out, the amount of money, gas, cost for that. But you know what? Everybody just sits and watch it happen. And you know what? Everybody pays the price. What's my point? My point is that if we want to progress as a nation, we will have to move beyond mere complaints. And we will have to have actual practical things that a country needs to run, to progress, to survive, and hold ourselves and our leaders to that task. Because I'll tell you something. Politicians act on what people is important to people, especially in times of election. And we need to advance our agenda and deal with things that affect us, like the roads, like the hospitals, like opportunities, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even look at our national university, you know. There are a number of things that a national university is supposed to do. we would like to see, especially in a country like Belize, that when you come out of UB, you there, Bert?
Yeah, I'm listening. Go ahead.
You're not simply getting a bachelor's in business so that you take up a job that your parent used to do with a high school degree. You know, we don't want to have a race to the bottom or where you have some kind of academic inflation where all you are doing is getting more degrees to compete for the same old job. You know, there's a lot of stuff to be done in Belize. Right now, as I told you, that even on the urban front, you know, there's big multi-million dollar money in urban farms on the top of buildings in New York City, right? Belize has a situation where there's a lot of stuff that we can do in very practical terms. We're not even marketing our cashew that is growing wild, you know? We're not even marketing the cajun that's growing wild. You look at the blackberry, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
These are practical solutions that UB, local entrepreneurship and so forth, needs that when people do a degree that they come out with some kind of business plan, especially if they need to do it like on a cooperative front, because, you know, a lot of people don't have that business discipline and so forth, but at least they can be plugged in to something that is going somewhere, you know. So on the national front, I think we need to start to focus on solutions and things that affect us. Many times I, you know, if I were to be able to speak to people, you know, I haven't spoken to the people in COLA and all these different organizations, not to get carried away and be influenced by the politics of the day and to pursue bigger agendas, right? And the big agendas, as I told you, are the ones that come back to haunt us. And one clear one, as I mentioned, is we live in a city that if there's a crisis, the hospital is evacuated and the very place that needs to help you won't be there.
Well, yeah, if which is a paradox. That's all this paradox right there. It is. But you know,
that's not a national issue. And you know what? I can tell you, we can literally deal with certain governments, and the government of Belize knows exactly what kind of governments they could do to build an all-weather tower. Right now, you have even, you know, funds. You know, we've had neighbors in, you know, that have helped us in different ways. But there are people with real money who could do that. You know, the British, take for example, Bert, the British Army used to be there with their helicopters, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you get injured on the islands, right, or in the south, do you know if you're in PG and if you have a motor vehicle accident, that's almost a death sentence?
Imagine that indeed. That's scary.
Do you know we don't have an evacuation service with helicopters that readily available for Belizeans? The British used to do that with their Puma helicopters. They were there. But they locked up. You talk about reparation, that's one of the least things that they should have left for us. A couple of Puma helicopters with, you know, staff. Those are things that we should fight for. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
You know? But again, we have to train. You know what I hope is that even as you're in the diaspora and dealing with a lot of stuff from a global, a bigger perspective, some of these, if this talk show, if my time here is simply me opening up my mouth and giving my ideas and that's it, then it's literally a waste. Because I speak from one who is from the belly of the beast as far as medicine is concerned. It is a fish from River Bottom, tell you, say, alligator have belly.
Yeah,
you
understand?
Story,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so my point is, if I tell you that we need to start advocate for an all-weather tower at KHMH so that the hospital doesn't need to evacuate in the event of a major hurricane, that's an issue we need to nail on our bulletin board, and we need to present that to the people of the country and agitate that we want this. It can happen. Government, I believe, not have to pay $1, so to speak, to make that happen. It just needs the will, and it needs to get the right people. And when projects like that happen, we need to, you know, see them to completion and do what they're supposed to do without people just thief the money or you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
You know? And there are many other national agendas that I hope. Because, you know what, Bert? As I said, human beings were created in the image of their maker. Nobody better than you. Nobody smarter than you. You have one set of talents where I don't have. You understand?
Yeah, we are.
And so do other people. Mm-hmm. And what we need to do, again, as I told you, if you have a mentality which you inherit from the British, and a supremacist first-class, second-class mentality, then you will treat and disrespect your fellow human being, or you'll pimp them, or you'll use them, or you'll abuse them. But if you believe that the Most High put you on the face of the earth to be of service to mankind, then you will realize that when you have knowledge or when you have abilities, it is to impart what has been given to you. You know why people get heart attack and a lot of those things? Is that we take on board a whole lot of junk, right? And we clog up our system, right? When what we really need to do is to make sure that we don't consume stuff just to hoard it on our own selves. We need to keep the flow going. And I learned even from my specialty, the thing that damages the vessels is when we put all kind of junk mentality and junk stuff inside our systems, and we not only junk up ourselves, we end up, you know, not imparting or not causing nourishment for mm-hmm. people around us or for the country in which we are. So we're dealing with an uphill battle, but it is one that I think is a call to citizenship. But it would really need leadership. And leadership is not politics. Leadership is where you have us collectively using even the avenues that we have. You have here like a platform. It's a forum where we can move beyond just, at the talk, at the complaint, and then we go about our business and nothing changes. You know, we need people who realize that really, each one of us has a role and each one of us needs to be empowered. I think it is disrespectful when another man looks at me as though I am somebody who is some strange person or stranger. I believe everyone, you know, I heard one man said that the richest place is the graveyard.
Yeah.
Have you heard that?
Yes, I think I've heard that saying there.
Yeah, but it is not that there's gold teeth or gold jewelry buried there. It is the ideas that never bore fruit, especially in a situation like Belize where so many of our young people, literally if you add them up by the thousands and many more thousands named through the years simply because, you know, of the cannibalism that is taking place. And I use that word deliberately.
Well, I mean, see, what it is, you know, Bernard, you know, let's take a break, because I usually take a break on the top of the hour, and can you hold on for like a two, three minutes, and we're going to take a little break and then come back on the next segment and tackle something. One of the things I want to, before we go to the break, I want to say this, that this culture of impunity that we seem to have, you know, that you're discussing, this culture of impunity where you know, where we just seem to let neglect happen because it's allowed to happen. I recall that when there was this big hem and cry the other day over when the babies got some prenatal care or some.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were you familiar with that incident, that event that came in when 12 or 13 babies just?
I have some insight in. To me, the issue was less one of the doctors than one more of the way the situation was handled. We are people who like to operate in crisis mode.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, that's our biggest problem.
And there were some things that were fundamentally lacking at the KHMH that, for me, if it wasn't that, it was going to be something else. And it's part of the reason why I hate to say that I knew I had to come back out here, but if there was one thing, it saddened me how you have people at the institution whose agenda is not the benefit of, you know, the people of Belize City in particular and the people of the country in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think one thing...
You know... Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Bernard. Yeah.
And Bernard, I'll say this here because I'm not afraid to say it, and I'm not trying to pick a fight or a quarrel, but, it's actually something that, you know, I even got a letter legal to write, but I had really wish the person would try to prosecute it, but I wrote someone, you know, they had an agenda which was parasitic. And maybe I'm being a bit kind even in saying this here. you know, but you know, for me, you cross a line when you pimp a hospital. You understand?
Yeah.
You know, you could do that with business or what have you, but if you're in the business of trying to take care of people, then if you mess with a hospital or hospital monies, you become my enemy because
What I observe, Bernard, is that in Belize, we do not necessarily approach our healthcare needs from a public health standpoint. You know, meeting the needs of the underserved or the have-nots, but you know, it tends to be, you know, we tend to look at it from as a preferential classes income-based system, and to me, that's the worst form of approach to try to help your population. You know, which is one of your most valuable resources.
My brother, if you want to, as I said, we could take this up on the second half and explore this a little further. But as I said, even when you look at where people are trained, you know one thing a Cuban doctor said once, and he laughed. He said, "Have you noticed that the hello?"
Yeah, go ahead.
He was talking about, we would have expected that many of our doctors who train in developing countries would come back with a better attitude of service. The sad fact is that many of them train on the systems where, you know, the dog eat the supper of the poor. You understand?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some of us are trained in such brutal systems. And I can tell you, you know, if you expect boy, it's a mindset thing where some people see their profession as the way to make money, full stop, you know. And that before anything else. What can I do about that? You know,
mm-hmm.
that's man's value systems. And it plays out in the way. All right, give you a practical thing. You know when doctors used to complain to me at the KHMH about anything? But you know what I used to do? Anytime they complain, I said, you know what? Thanks for letting me know. We will work through this situation together. Because if they thought that I was the one who created those problems and that they won't be a part of the solution, they're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? People want to complain and figure that that's the end of their job, right? But if you're asking them, are they willing to be a part of the solution, you get a very different feedback. And so, again, it boils down. Do you care about human beings?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see yourself as someone who is there to impart what you've been given? Most people, sadly, don't think that way. And you know what? It means that nothing changes. It means that the systems, we will complain about it today, and we'll complain about it in the days to come. And so, if we want, and I'm using a big if, because this is not me, it is not you, will we challenge our people that we want to live in a different belief, that we want to live in a better belief, that we want to live in a belief where we're not looking for politicians to be the solutions to our problems? Yes, they have a role. But the fact is that we collectively as a people, and it's serious, because in that letter that I mentioned about the tribute to Bert Tucker, what I mentioned is that the country of Belize does not have a single proper urologist.
Yes.
And when we had one, his name was Neil Garbutt, and he was in the diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
And Neil Garbutt, you know, he was a strong-willed person.
And prostate cancer among men is a very serious condition in this country, and yet we only have maybe one or no urologist. And
I don't want to sound dramatic, but with it dead off, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's not a national... That's what I'm trying to say. It's like, you know, with it slow dead,
mm-hmm.
right? With it dead from crop, right? With it dead from violence, with it dead from the carnage on the roads, right? With the dead from all kind of preventable medical issues. I'm telling you, if you sit where I sit, then you'll realize that tackling the bull by the horns is a matter of survival of Belize as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we, you know, a lot of people used to worry about Guatemala and Guatemala. My brother, the biggest enemy of Belize is right inside Belize. You know, it is we ourselves. And unless we take a long, hard look in the mirror, right? And unless we recognize that there are some things that we need to do if we are to survive as a people, if we are to survive as a nation.
But what's
you know, I can tell you, go ahead. I can tell you that there are some sinister agendas which would really, I mean, someone, you know what someone said?
That pushes these things down, KMH and those
so
other...
So someone, if they're looking for a country to take over, Belize is the perfect place to take over, you know? And simply, that's what, you know, and I use the word because I you know, these big pimps, you know, that have taken over and come and hijack our politics and hijack our economics, you know, they realize that Belize is an easy country to take over, an easy country to influence. See what I'm saying?
Live. Bernard, are you still there?
Still here.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Still here.
What I'm doing now, I'm actually using the landline now because the Skype thing is not efficient and it's frustrating. This conversation is too important for us to to be having such a conversation. So hopefully for the next 45 minutes that we have left, we're not going to have the kind of issue that we have. But I was saying, Bernard, that what is very telling for me is, and this is something that's very fundamental, is flawed. When the very leaders of the country, including the people who were in charge of the gatekeepers, as you aptly put it, when their preferred choice for treatment and their families are elsewhere, not at the KHMU facility, this underscores, this to me further underscores the perception of the poor in a society that the economic deck is stacked against them and that the economic system favors the wealthy. So those who are suffering economically are also extremely concerned about inequality. And this should be a major concern to all of us, because unequal societies with less inclusive institutions have greater difficulty sustaining growth. So some of the things that you're talking about, and I agree with you that, I want to go back to the article that you wrote where you made a correlation between the violence and the health of our nation, and, where you made that, those two are not mutually exclusive at all. In fact, I would argue that they are very much go hand in hand. And what you argued in an article where, for example, with gunshot wounds and the fact that KHMH have less than stellar ability to treat those things here. What do you think it's going to take for us to really put this in the forefront of the public policy agenda, as a focusing event? Because there's enough indicators in focusing event that something is seriously wrong with our healthcare system, and not only our healthcare system, but our system in general, but what is it going to take for Belizeans to understand that, look, we cannot continue to chase our tail like this?
To be honest with you, change will happen when people demand change. When I say demand, I'm not talking about only getting on a talk show or only complaining when there's a crisis. You know what I would hope? As I said, someone who has been there, I am more than willing to offer my support to any initiative that speaks, or maybe let me rephrase that. I know I have a responsibility as one who has been in that belly of the beast. But it's not one individual who will advocate and for change that happens inside an institution. It will be, you see the same platform that you have here? Perhaps what we can do is to engage locally. I'm not sure. I presume that most of the audience to this show would be Belizeans in the diaspora. I'm not sure what the...
Yes.
But what we in the diaspora and we who are very, really connected to Belize, I don't like the diaspora terminology because I'm as Belizean as they come. I'm just doing some work that I can only do here, and not in Belize for the time being, But having said that, I believe I have a responsibility to engage with you and to engage with others who can pursue not just a complaining agenda, but could say, you know what, we need some of these things to happen in place. Now, I'll tell you something. The KHMH is not the same institution. There are a lot of good things that institution does. And for the record, during my tenure and even beyond, I'll tell you, because, I don't mind who takes credit, but clearly, we've had, the same group of folks that you mentioned, politicians, come to the KHMH for service because the KHMH offered what was not offered in the public sector in Belize. So we've had sitting politicians had their operations at the KHMH, had their hearts checked at the KHMH, had diagnostics done at the KHMH. So, and that was initially from folks who were on the sidelines. So I believe that there is a way, And remember how politics works. Politicians take credit for anything that happens positive. I don't mind them doing that. But we as people who live in the country, go ahead.
You said something that was very telling to me here. That I wanted to focus on that for a minute. Well, you said that You know, we have become a people who listen, wait for the next tragedy to occur, then become focused and active onto something that's exposed. I mean, it's like essentially a reactive mind, and that seems to be part of the I don't want to say problem, but that seems to be part of definitely an issue that we have where we just, you know, or even public policy apparatus is very reactionary. We're not proactionary at all. We just wait for something bad to happen. It's almost like an expectation of disaster.
Why do you think that happens? Give you an example. When I first was invited up here by Nobel laureate Bernard Long in 2002, right, Boston, you know what the first thing that struck me when I was in this whole Longwood medical area? There was one word that rang in my head. It's called legacy. That some people in times past did what was necessary for this thing to become what it is. My point is this, that Bert, at its core, I'm telling you, the thing that will make the difference in what happens in our country will not be, I'm not saying talk is critical, it's important, but it will come from the doers. And the doers are, what, to do something, Bert, it takes not only time, it also means that you need to be willing to be in other people's bad books. Because I'll tell you something, when I just accepted the CAT lab at the KHMH, the Diagnostic Cardiac Catheterization Laboratory, the weight of people in who are heavily connected in politics and failed politicians came against me. I'm telling you that even I had to go against my own leadership at the hospital. What a lot of people don't realize, are you willing to act smartly? Not you. You see, for me, I said I was not going to leave KHMH and said we could have do this or we should have do this. You understand? You know why? Because there are people back home who depend, whose life and death situation depends on what I do or don't do. And so the way to deal with our hospital, I can tell you tangible things. One of the most primary things, the hurricane season is coming up. If it is not this year, it will be sometime when you will hear a big tragedy hit the city and there is no hospital in sight. Do you think the all of Belize City will ever evacuate? And if Belize City is hit by a big hurricane, and there is no plane that can land at the airport, where will they get their health care from? That's what leadership is. Leadership is anticipating and preparing and protecting your people. And I'm telling you that one of the things that is necessary on the health care front, I'm not talking about prevention, I'm talking about health care, is that an agenda that I deliberately wrote in my tribute to Bert Tucker is that we were working on a plan to create an all-weather tower so that the hospital will not have to evacuate in the event of a major hurricane. That is a tangible agenda how we pursue that. So what we do is that we mention this to our leaders that we want to find the money and the grant, and I couldn't tell you where to go because Bert Tucker was dealing with the Venezuelans. You have people like the Arab Fund. You have the Arabs don't know what to do. Some of them don't know what to do with their money. I'm not disrespecting them. But we have the Qataris, the Kuwaitis that we've dealt with. These people can give us, you know, a hospital tower. But we have to be willing to deal with those people, and we have to be willing to make it happen. So here am I telling you that, you know, we have some very tangible things. Now, one of the things is that needs to happen to help the KHMH is that they need to establish a faculty of medical education at the university. Every hospital has to have a university so that then doctors, when they go back home, then continue to get formal education so that they could keep in touch and so that they know what they do. Entiende? You understand?
Yes.
So right now, if you don't want a doctor, you come from Cuba. Make I tell you a little thing. I'm not disrespecting them because my niece was in Cuba and you have to take advantage of opportunities. And, you know, we thank Cuba for helping us out. But the fact is that most of our medical students, 150 of them presumably are there right now, you know, Cuba is no internet country, right? You understand? And many of them, they have very little practical experience. And any doctor, for that matter, when you just train and come back, you don't have the experience. Well, what we need, we have doctors trained from all kind of places. Some are Cuba, some are Guatemala, a few from the Caribbean, some are Mexico, some come from India, some come from... And everybody to do their own thing. And everybody believes that their thing correct. So what, if you have Harvard Med University, or if you have the Brigham and Women or Mass General Hospital, they have their university, the Harvard Medical School, which is the medical school for Harvard University. The hospital in the Caribbean, they have, you know, the University of the West Indies. There's a reason for that, okay? So this is a very tangible thing so that the doctors from PG, North, South, East, and West, that they have somebody where they look out for their education and make sure then they get their education so that they could do a better job of looking after people. What we need some practical telemedicine network. You see the same network I tell you is that right now, if you go down to Punta Gorda, right now as I speak, you can't get an ultrasound. You're not a pregnant woman. You can't get an ultrasound right now. Hello? You see this little device? I took my little device down in September in Punta Gorda. And I examined a number of patients and their hearts. But you know what we need to do? We need to have a network of these things to connect up so that regardless of what village you live in, even where they don't have any electricity, you have diagnostics that cost less than $10,000 that can be quickly, you know, connected through satellite or through Wi-Fi or through the telephone networks to either the major hospital or even abroad to help you with diagnostics. They need to be on every ambulance and those kind of stuff like that. So having the university involved in what happens at Orange Walk Hospital, KHMH, down in Punta Gorda, etc., and having those doctors, rather than them being on their own, to do their own thing, and many of them are inexperienced. That is critical, you know, for the health care that is provided in the people in this country, right? And so I believe that at the medical front, they need to take some decision. Now, you want to tell me that we can't get a urologist, have Belizeans actively being trained in that area, or, and in the interim, have our partners being based on the ground in Belize City to look after them? And you know what is worthless? You know what is so horrible, yeah, Bert? Is that most of our politicians are men. And we men the dead up, and we don't even have pity for our own self. You understand? All are with a man. Half of the country the man. We need to let them deal with our agenda. That we need more doctors who are urologists. We had one, Neil Garbutt. He was prevented from working at the hospital by the little mafia that prevented him from working at the KHMH. You know? But what I'm trying to say is that these are practical things that affect you right where you live, right where you're there, or your relatives. And these are things that we need in small steps to advocate for things. I don't like just people that complain sick because they have a mouth. I mean, yes, you have a freedom of speech and what have you, and that is good. But we need to set things to fruition. I mean, with all due respect to the people who they fight against politicians who they accuse of corruption and what have you, to me, I would prefer to run with some of their agenda right here with the talk about.
Okay. When you say
you understand?
When you say the mafia, when you say the mafia, I'm assuming you're talking about people who will sabotage good initiatives, right?
Can I tell you, Neil Garbutt was Belize's first trained neurologist, and he was trained in the States. But there was a local medical mafia that didn't want Neil Garbutt to work at the KHMH. He was a urologist. He was a foreigner in his own land. And then, you know, he was a fiercely independent man, so he never really put up with any foolishness, and he just practiced on the sideline. But the mafia, what the mafia did was badmouth him and say he's not this, he's not that. I don't know if you get where
I'm
coming.
This is the part that I get what you're saying. Again, the gatekeepers who don't want to, they want to sabotage good initiatives that are, you know, in other words,
let's put it like, let me be very practical, right? We had a local entity that wanted to do cardiac catheterization or supposedly started it, right? And they were putting themselves up as to be the people. They wrote me a letter, right, from the medical council by the person who is partner in this institute, telling me that I had to put myself up. By the way, I'm registered as a specialist in the United States, but I can't be registered as a specialist in Belize, just to let you know. I was director of medical services at the KHMH. I pioneered a number of things. I have 3 specialties, just for the record, but I'm not registered as a specialist in Belize, okay? Because you have a cabal, you have a clique, you have a little small mind, people with connections and in their own little worlds. I use these words deliberately because they are true, you know. They accosted me. They even came to the KHMA to try to harass me to meet with them. I told them, my brother, guys, I don't answer to you. You know what? I told them we had more important issues to deal with. But you get where I'm coming from. That's what I mean by the medical mafia.
Yes, indeed.
People who have small minds, small agendas, and who want to maintain the status quo. But, you know, the truth is they can't stop anything. If people are smart enough, right, and if people are organized enough, a positive agenda always pulls through. Because what I realize, negative agendas have no solutions. They propose nothing. They just want to maintain the status quo. That's why I tell you is that what we have to do is to advocate for tangible stuff. We need to advocate for dual carriageway between Corozal and Belize City and between Belize City and Belmopan. I personally am an outsider, but I think it's as simply as asking the Mexicans and making the decision that with people in the dead up on the highway, right, we have highway not lighted, you go right to Chetumal, that like night and day you come across to Belize, and it is shameful. We don't have no shame. We can't say, here what? You know? I mean, the amount of people who slaughtered on the highway, head-on collision, that's what kills people, these head-on collisions.
Yeah.
And, of course, the reckless driving and just, you know. So, but these are things that we need today.
I just know what you're saying.
And so if we advocate this, it becomes a political agenda, and you force the politicians, you drive the agenda rather than the politicians set the agenda. But not only that, you want tentative steps to make sure these things happen. And there are ways I would want to see the pressure group do this rather than being fodder for, you know, any local little politics, because, you know, I hate to say, one of the sad things about people in Belize, right, is that desperate people do desperate things. So if you don't have no job, you have to put food on the table and send them picnic at school. You know, you find yourself getting caught in a survival mode, and you end up being invariably fodder for somebody's agenda. And so if somebody has a political agenda, they will hijack, you know, a pressure group, you know, just to look after their issues. I mean, put food on their table and send their picnic to school. And so what you find happening is that a lot of the noise that is being made leaves us just the way we were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. But those are 2 tangible issues that I mentioned that we need, that the killway, the roads and the hospital. We have other big agendas regarding the education of our people and the role of UB and those things there. You know? You know what I identified, and I'm saying it out in the open, right? Because Belize has a lot of people in academia, and they could help that national university. But, you know, we have to overcome that narrow mindset where we're not living in the dark ages anymore. And this is one critical place that the diaspora can get involved in mentoring both faculty and students, you know, and have that university do what it's supposed to do. Bert?
Yes.
You there?
Yes, but please.
You know one of the Belize's famous for his Mayan archaeology, right? Do you know that we have Minnesota, people in Minnesota, they have big literally multi-million dollar exhibition with Belize stuff. Do you know, let me show you how shameful things are in Belize. Do you know that the UB does not have a faculty of archaeology or anything about the Maya? And do you know that a private university, they collect like $10,000 per semester per American European students on Belize's archaeology? And UB, no, they make one penny, one dime from Belize archaeology, and then they complain about they don't have enough money. You know, UB could be the center where rich Mexicans, Guatemalans, and people who want to learn English from all over the world could have immersion. Or marine is world class. You know, we're in a time when there's an online education, which is a big deal. If you have students who just be there, you could just have a few dozen or a few hundred maximum. And online education. What I'm trying to say is that there are lots of things, practical things. I'm not, because one of the things that we need to also do is that when we find agendas, we have to pin them on the bulletin board, to-do list. Because that's how we are move forward, on the to-do list. And not, I don't live my life in crisis mode anymore. You have to plan. As they say, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. Of course, the Most High has the last word, but the point is you stop. You reach a stage where, yes, we have the talkers, but the talkers have to connect up with the doers, and collectively we can get our hands dirty. So this, we're dealing with a survival issue. There are a number of things. And even when it comes with UB, you may not know this, Bert, but Belize has about 300 square kilometers of granite. Means that we could be mining granite for 1,000 years. Granite is the second hardest stone after diamond. Natural stone.
Yeah, granite, yeah.
Okay? Mm-hmm. I had started a company called Belize Clay Products Limited and Belize Granites. Because back in that time when I just came back from university, I was also in Trinidad where they made bricks out of, clay. You know? And the point is about 17% of Belize's soils, all the way from here to you go up to, you know, mile 30s and so forth. Once you, all that Pine Ridge country is clay. It's clay because, you know, big tall trees can't penetrate that thick clay. And so you have the Pine Ridge and the soil is acidic. Back then we did not have any oil or bunker, so it was expensive. And my point is, even from a national industry, even getting them boys to work and learn a new skill, you know, you talk about those crimes, there are a lot of practical ways. The devil finds work for idle hands, right? There are a lot of practical ways rather than maybe just the infrastructure products and so forth that can bring new skill. And Belize has stuff that can make money. You know, I'm not talking about pie in the sky. I can tell you I spent about $100,000, Belize, just to try to do all the technical work and the specs to get a clay plant on the ground. Now, I'm a doctor, but for me, I found that I had wished more of my engineer friends that when they came back, you know, also to see how we can improve on the stuff that we do back home. And there was one guy who is not a university or engineer. He's at Mile 31, Rochelle Bevans. Right now he's making bricks the old-fashioned way. He has an extruder and he's burning them with wood. But those are things that, in a very practical way, you know, is a new skill, could save money. And you know why that was important, Bert? Bert?
Well, yeah, go ahead.
You know why I think the clay stuff was important? Because every block we make, every cement block, we import the cement that goes into the block. And with clay, it is 100% local raw materials. They're just clay and sand mixed, but you burn it in a kiln. And please have clay that if it's mining it for now, it, 1,000 years, it will still have clay. You understand what I'm trying to say? So we have a lot of things, a lot of practical things to do. Belize needs workers, right? But we need visionaries. We need people who have lived and know how to do things, seen things done, and together we collectively say, you know what, we want to move the country forward. And I tell you, a lot of things too, we can't get away from this. It boils down to a lot of things called money. You know, business is critical. And all people historically have not been taught or trained to do business. But everything about buy and sell, you know. You know that?
Yeah. Well, we need to develop local industries, and I think that's one of the things that you're discussing. And that's been the bane of our underdevelopment, because we tend to we import 98% of what we consume, and we don't produce anything. Local industries, like you're saying, like the granite. Another thing that's really common around here is the limestone, calcium carbonate. That's just there where you can use, where we call it white marl. That's another industry that you could use. That could also be used in the making of the cement and things. So,
yep, absolutely.
There's so much things that we could that can be done, but we, like you said, the vision and practical stuff. Because, for example, white marl is common all over Belize. I mean, if you go anywhere in the country, you go, you'll see white marl. I've seen it all over, but something like that to create an industry where you can have natural resources, where you don't have to import these things. But we have this mercantile, again, you're asking the mercantile class too, that wants to keep that status quo that way, so that that's why our country is permanently underdeveloped, and we have an economy in a perpetual state of disrepair, because we will continue to go towards the foreign donors and the foreign lenders. And we pass this debt back on to a society, and we don't develop anything. We need local industries, and it can be done if we have the vision and we have the will, the political will to get it done. But it's not in a vacuum. Really, what you're saying is not in a vacuum.
Some local industries is as simple as something that you could do at home. You know, I had a guy, he had started making, hello? Yeah, I had this guy,
yeah,
he had started, you know the big blackberry tree that all them berries that we make berries wine from?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Those can be it's one of the commonest trees around Belize City. It literally grows wild around the Belize country, you know? And what I'm saying is that we're dealing with the whole area of health foods and antioxidants and those things, but all it requires is somebody who is determined enough, right, to make a decision that this is something that they want to do. And you can deal with many other things, you know. You have, if you travel around Belize, you will see one of the commonest trees that you travel around. It's called the cuhun, you know. And it's more than just making oil. You know, the amount of stuff that could be made out of it. So, but, you know, I'll tell you, you know, for me, you know, we're throwing these things out, but if we're serious, you know, again, entrepreneurship starts in all kind of settings. You know, it starts as a simple person making a Johnny Cake, right? You know, that is an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
Food is a business that will never go away, because as long as you live, you have to be eating. At one time, Belize, especially in Belize City, had relinquished, you know, their food to the Chinese. Right, but it's a good thing to see, you know, small vendors, people making their own food at home and selling them on the street corner. That's something that's really positive. You know, I really take my hats off to them.
I do too.
But I'll tell you, people will have to be organized, because sadly, the salvation of Belize does not rest in politics. It will really rest in the people who will have to be wise enough, enlightened enough, to recognize that there are things that we need to do, that you don't have to be hostage, you know. But a lot of things take work, you know. You know, part of the problem, Bert, is that generally people won't work unless they have to. You know, Belize is our enjoyment culture. Belize is our entertainment culture, right? And not... Mm-hmm. Not many of our people, you know, people historically have been taught to look for a job. And hey, that's okay. We'll always need people for a job. But you and I know the Mennonites did not come to Belize to look for a job. You know, the Chinese did not come to Belize to look for a job. Neither did the Indians, and neither did many of those folks. What they saw was opportunity. And as I said, you know, why is it? You know, I have a nephew trained in Cuba. Do you know right now? Hello? Do you know right now that the prison is actually selling chicken to the Chinese?
The same prison that over there, you talk about the one in...
Colby Prison. I'm telling you, the figure from my nephew is in charge of the agriculture kind of stuff is that they were producing, I think, in excess of 20,000 pounds of chicken a month up at the prison.
That's excellent.
Then they grow their vegetables, then they catch their fish, then grow their stuff, then they sell casket now, you know, right? And all those lot of practical things. And so to me,
well,
even
I mean,
in an institution like that,
we need, I think one of the things, Bernard, that I mean, we don't have a lot of time left. We have like maybe less than 5 or 6 minutes left, but I thought wrapping it up because I'm going to have to bring you on again, brother, when I'm back in the States, because that way, you know, because the conversation is too powerful to just have it just, you know, relegated to, you know. And, but let me just say this, that one of the things that I always knew about you is that your vision transcends just what you're doing. In other words, yes, you're a medical doctor. And that's all well and good, but your focus is your consciousness is not just on you're a humanist first and before you're a doctor, man. That's what I always know about you. And as a humanist, you always are looking out for how you can help your fellow man. You've always been like that. And I think we need more people who can. And Bert Tucker was like that. Yes, he was a brilliant economist. Yes, he worked with all some of the top areas in Africa and the rest of the country, but he was a humanist first and foremost, and I think that's the kind of way I try to pattern myself to be a humanist, because where you don't pigeonhole yourself into just one area, because we know there's a lot of problems with the healthcare system, and we know there's a myriad of issues that can be improved, but as a humanist, we're touching issues that transcend whether it's a PUP or UDP. We're looking at national development of our country, that country allegiance as opposed to party allegiance or allegiance of a particular few. How can we move this country to sustainable economic development and long-term planning? That's our challenge.
Together. My short answer is that we have to do it together. And if someone asked me once, Bernard, how you have done so much in academia and medical education and so forth, I said, I am not an academic. I didn't set forth to become an academic. You know what? I've always, and I'm thankful for being given this mind. You know what is my agenda? It is, how can Bernard help? How can I help? And that's everywhere. That's how doors have opened for me. It's not by trying to be a taker. It is, how can I help? And I haven't said it in this program, but by the grace of God, I've done stuff that have never been done in the history of this institution or this country. I don't talk about it much, but, after I leave this earth, people will hear. But my point is, all I've tried to do, I've been put on the face of the earth, given 2 hands, 2 feet, and a brain, and other things. And all I've tried to do is do the part that Bernard is supposed to do. If I go to any place, if I meet any person, I hope that is my legacy. But for Belize to move forward, we have to do it together. The problem is that we box out one another, we hate one another, we fight against one another, and that's why things don't get done, because the things that I say here, the things that you have, and the things that we all have collectively, if we say we want to build a country, then we get together and build it. But the agenda of politicians are not to build a country, that's to win election. You understand?
Yes.
But people don't understand that. If the country builds, fine. But for many people, it's our turn to feed. But that's a very short-sighted thing. And I'll tell people this. There's a thing, this is how I live my life. There's a thing called Judgment Day, Bert. And when you're in a position to help people, and you end up to pimp people, you understand? That is wrong.
It is wrong.
And that's why we don't move forward, because if we care for one another, we are listen to one another. We are try to help one another. We don't only disrespect one another. We don't use one another. We don't only marginalize one another. The diaspora here wants to get involved. But the way the system is structured, that your own people, the very people you try to help, will end up to hate you. Because they've been taught.
Yeah.
That's how people have been taught. And sadly, You know, we're living in a world where there's a competition for the mind. Everything is fighting for some of your attention. And sadly, many people are just willing to believe whatever they hear. But I believe, you know one thing I know, Bert? You can't build a solid building for a shaky foundation. And all in lot of lightweight agenda, they will come and they will disappear.
Yeah.
And that is what comforts me, because you could only, like, you know, people, there comes a point in time, if you study history, you can't fool all the people all of the time. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And Belize is a wealthy country.
Mm-hmm.
Belize, nobody smarter than you. Nobody better than you. But that's why God put the body. We have one hand, mouth, ears, foot, teeth, everything. But how they work? They work together. I deal with the cardiovascular system. The system, not just the heart, they work. But the blood vessels, the arteries, the veins. If you cut out one and then the system are broke down. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And what we have as a country,
mm-hmm.
we are dismembering one another. That's why we cannibalize. That's the word I use, cannibalize one another. Because much of what I said, I don't know, new idea. Because it means that we are dead. At many different levels, we cannibalize one another. I left Belize, I think I'm a relatively average or stupid. I may think people from Jamaica, Trinidad better than me. I can say by the grace of God, I'm the best at what I do in the world. You understand?
We only have to cut you short because we're out of time, my brother. We're literally out of time. We're out of time. Time is upon us. But let me just say this. I want to bring you on again. So just have your information. You know, in Massachusetts, California. So I'll be talking to you. You were listening to Dr. Burnham, who is one of the brilliant minds in our country. I mean, bar none, unquestionably. And it just goes to show, it's a cool honor to are humble and caring. But they have some of the worst governance of politics to prevent any positive policy position as it relates to anything in the country. So I want to leave my audience with this. And I want to thank Dr. Bernard for coming on.
Listen,
do the right thing.
Do the right thing.
And God bless.
God bless.
So, Bernard,
respect.
We'll talk another time, my brother.
Thank you for the chat, Bert. Appreciate it. Respect.
Right. Thanks for the praise.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, Belizeans, you just heard Dr. Bernard Bova. Do the right thing. Have a wonderful weekend.